Yes, that's the sound of the July 20th, 2000 version of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm your host, Robert Norris. Stay tuned for 2 hours of me, you, and anyone else who joins us. We'll be talking about the latest plan to kill affordable housing in the Beach Flats, City Council's sneak euthanasia before it goes on its month vacation in August. Stay with us. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're going to actually begin with a phone call. Let's see what we got on the line here. And apparently a dial tone. So, yeah, call again in case you do want to call into our show. It's, I should say, my show. It's 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Easy to remember. Just push them buttons. Join us out here. We can use your help, we can use your input, and we can use your oversight because, you know, alone we babble, and together we talk. That's how it is, sort of. 427-3772, if you want to call into Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM is what you're listening to. You can catch us off air at 427-4523. You can write us at P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Webpage is www.microradio.net/FRSC. Email frsc@microradio.net or at cruzio.net. So, welcome to the show. It's, as usual, 20 degrees higher in the studio than it is outside, so I'm going to have to start waving myself a little cool air shortly. Things got kind of hot at the city council the other night, too, and there is another city council meeting coming up next Tuesday on the 25th of July. Last one was on the 11th, and as you may remember, around the issue of the sleeping ban, that medieval Santa Cruz law that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep in a vehicle or outside, in fact, anywhere on public property after 11 o'clock at night. That's illegal for 700 to 1,500 homeless people. On threat of $54 tickets, midnight knocks and wake-ups, beatings by people unknown. You don't usually get beaten by the police in Santa Cruz, but you get your spirit beaten by the police, which is a sort of equally unpleasant kind of phenomenon, and that happens with some regularity, people who are outside. City Council has been under pressure from a lot of us to take the proper step to make it legal for homeless people to sleep somewhere, to eliminate the words, for example, sleeping as a definition of the camping ordinance, because camping certainly does not mean sleeping. Sleeping is something we all have to do. Camping is something we can choose to do. Although there are arguments that say when it's raining and you're outside with your family, you have no other place to be, you certainly have a right to shelter yourself. And if people want to call that camping, fine, call it camping. Just don't call it illegal. But we were just talking about sleeping. For the last decade, we've said, let's start, at least from here, that sleeping shall not be declared illegal. And we've had hunger fasts, we've had mounting protests at City Council, we've had parades and marches, we've had call-ins to City Council, we've had pie-ins, we've had porta-potties threatened with arrest at the door of the council. That was the last City Council. They threatened to arrest me if I brought this 5-pound bedside commode into the city council. It was a completely clean commode. There wasn't any question of it being a soiled commode. but they didn't like the idea of even being reminded of the fact that the city council, had not put porta-potties and dumpsters into the industrial zones, even after 15 months, and the Crone-Crapper Commission, the task force on the bathrooms that was set up by council member Christopher Crone, had taken no action to do that. And, of course, then they were getting lots of complaints that people were going poo-poo and pee-pee and leaving their stuff in heaps. Of course, I suppose I would expect people should, levitate it, evaporate it, burn it. I don't know what their ideas are. One would think that they would provide for sanitary facilities for such necessary deals, but not our city council, not under the pressure from groups like Texas Instruments and Plantronics, the large corporations in the industrial areas that apparently have now made it their business to be bigots are us in those areas, which perhaps is not to be well, it's not unexpected. It's something that we could figure that they might have done and that they did do. And in a way, also unexpected, is Catherine Byers' rabbit run on this issue, her turning tail and saying she wouldn't vote for what she originally seconded back on May 23rd, the industrial safe zone proposal, which was itself really too small and too limited. We all knew that, but at least it was something. What was really a surprise was that council members Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice, and perhaps this wasn't a surprise either, actually, although each time it happens, one gets more and more saddened, that they didn't even have the basic principle or interest in the issue to stand up and say, wait a minute, we've been working on this issue for 2 years. It's not true that there are all these problems with the proposal. It's not true that, that vehicles have come from Connecticut, Mississippi, and Gibraltar to sleep in the streets of Santa Cruz. That's just not true. These are false newspaper stories. We want to see the documentation. We want to see the complaints that have come in. Not one city council member asked for any of that. And at 1 a.m, they voted it down when nobody was there. Actually, Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar voted against it, and so you might say technically they stood up for it, but they didn't speak up for it. And that's the question. The question is, if we're going to get restore rights to basic rights to homeless people who are outside, we have to have a council that's willing to stand up and say, at least one person on that council has to be clear about why this has to be done, and has to keep repeating it loudly and publicly enough times until the message gets through. And the message, of course, is a relatively simple one, although you don't see much of it. I don't think much of it even got out in today's Good Times, which has a full issue on the sleeping ban and homeless people, and it's got its whole issue is supposedly devoted to homelessness. In Good Times, I guess we should all be excited if they do 2 pages of politics. They get, they're mostly a kind of a glad rag and a boop-op-de-boop kind of thing. But there was nothing about the 700 to 1,500 homeless people that are sleeping every night outside with no legal place to sleep and no possibility of a legal place to sleep. That's just how it is. And their own vehicles, their own property, legally parked, properly registered, is not considered a legal place for them to be. And that's in the county as well, by the way, unless they happen to be on private property. In the city, you can't be on private property and do that unless you're behind a fenced-in side yard or backyard. So you're even more restricted in the city, and the county now is, due to Art Danner, bars it on all roads and road right-of-ways. But it's the city we're looking at because it's the city law that we've been pressuring to change. Ironically, apparently the pressure to stop the city from liberalizing its law is coming from people like Marty Wormhout in the county, who are, although they're not publicly saying this, apparently are quietly putting the kibosh on this deal. And have been the people that have been pressuring Catherine Byers, sleeping ban Byers, as we call her, betrayal Byers. Byers beware, as the latest flyer I had it said. This is the councilwoman who, at 1 o'clock, surrendered to bigotry, and not only on June 27th withdrew the whole idea of the safe sleeping zones, even though that was not on the agenda for that night for any discussion at that date. Rather, they had on the agenda that it will be either put on the agenda on the next council meeting or not put on the agenda, not that it will be removed for all time. So she, I think, violated the Public Notification Act. People didn't even know what they were talking about, and so they didn't tune in, they didn't come in, and they didn't call or write in on the issue as they might have. Naturally, of course, the city attorney takes a different view, and anything that Catherine Byers does is just fine. And vice versa with John Barisone. The two of them seem to be so thick that even the most practiced thieves couldn't separate them. Yeah, you're tuned to Free Radio, and what you're listening to is Robert Norris. That's me. I'm talking about how do we restore human rights for the poorest people in Santa Cruz. Those are people outside the basic right I'm talking about, the right to sleep. And we've discussed this on the air repeatedly for the last decade. Who knows? One of these days I may get so tired of the topic I just may never, ever talk about it again. Wouldn't that be nice? Regardless of what this community or what this city council does. In the meantime, if you want to talk about it, and you should call 420-5017, which is the city council hotline. Puts you directly into a voicemail, and you can tell them to get off their sorry asses and do something soon. Well, not soon, on Tuesday. They have a thing coming up called the ballot measure. This is the latest cop-out deal that's hobbling down the road. It's a proposal, kind of a bastardization of an idea that actually was a good idea, which is the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, which came from two different groups, and most recently from David Silva's campaign to end the sleeping ban, previously from the coalition or the committee to repeal the sleeping ban. Well, their first initiative was stronger than the second. They both involved saying sleeping is not camping. There will be zones where people can legally sleep. Actually, they can legally sleep anywhere they want, but in certain zones, they can make it criminal. The Santa Cruz City Council can bar it in beachfront zones, in downtown zones, and in residential zones. And this, in very kind of watered-down form, reached the city council back on May 23rd, and they simply said, well, it'll only be legal in two zones, these industrial zones, and you'll have to be 500 feet away, 300 feet away from a house, and you'll have to move 500 feet every 3 days, a series of restrictions, some of which were more onerous than others, but it all got bogged down. So David Silva, activist who'd been fasting for many months and organizing others to fast for many months, and the only person allowed inside their negotiations by Mayor Sugar, who I think effectively split the homeless rights movement by that kind of action, finally, exhausted and demoralized, decided the best thing to do was to just forget this. He saw everything being watered down, pieced away, and delayed, and we won't do anything because we need environmental impact reports and so forth. He wanted simply to have it put on the ballot, the whole issue put on the ballot, specifically the issue of sleeping. Forget about the zones, just put sleeping on the ballot. Sleeping is not camping. And his old Green Party friend Fitzmaurice, who had been avoiding taking any reasonable or fair position on this for 2 years and following his maximum leader, Catherine Byers, with his little red wagon, apparently changed his mind and decided he was going to help out with, helped author the proposal to open the industrial zones until, as I said, they got problems from Texas Instruments and a couple big corporations, and the newspapers conducted their smears, and that was enough for council members to go running. Although Fitzmaurice didn't change his vote on this thing, he didn't speak up and advocate for it, so we don't have the leadership that would sustain this struggle and lead it into the next election effectively to win. But what they did do at the last council meeting is Fitzmaurice proposed a ballot measure. And the ballot measure is pretty peculiar. At least it hasn't come back in final form. It's due back on Tuesday night, and we actually can probably take a look at it tomorrow. If you go down to the city clerk's office, they'll give you a copy of the agenda and the staff report. The ballot measure talks about, well, we don't know the wording, but what Fitzmaurice talked about wanting to do was make it legal, eliminate the idea that sleeping is camping, so that if you find someone sleeping in a public place, that's not enough to arrest them, which is a good first step. However, because there had been all this brouhaha about vehicles in the industrial zone, he added a provision that would make it illegal to sleep in a vehicle anywhere on the public streets. And, of course, it's also illegal to sleep on private property in driveways except for 3 nights a month, thanks to his, frankly, ridiculous proposal that he proposed way back in 1999 and had passed. That's Fitzmaurice's proposal. So the question, what he proposed, and actually what we're going to hear a little bit of tape on, is we're going to hear a little bit of this discussion at the last city council meeting of Rotkin, who opposes any kind of liberalization of the whole process at all. Rotkin has always been a devotee of the sleeping ban, a man who thinks it's a wonderful law, you know, that we are such a progressive city, that this is a wonderful distinction from Carmel and other cities, because we have all these things about sleeping is illegal, because that requires the police to look for these indices of criminal behavior rather than simply whip out their bully clubs and drive people out of town. That's his rationale, which I think is pretty preposterous, but he keeps repeating it, so he must think it's worth something, and I think he does. But Rotkin did have a very good point in his debate with Fitzmaurice at the last council meeting. Fitzmaurice, because he kept saying to Fitzmaurice things like, now, are you saying that you want it to be legal not for people to defecate and urinate, not for people to cause a public nuisance, not for people to block the sidewalk, but you're going to say that if someone is sleeping on the sidewalk, that's legal, and that there's nothing that the city can do to get that person to move if they're not violating any other law? And, of course, the answer is yes, that is what Fitzmaurice's proposal would do. And that is a difficult answer to give, because it obviously is going to offend some people in residences who say, well, the sidewalks are not appropriate places to sleep. How do I get some bum who's sleeping on the sidewalk away from the front of my house? And the answer has to be, it's a public sidewalk, and we don't have shelters, and there's 700 to 1,500 homeless people. And, you know, there are all kinds of problems in this society, but we're not going to make it more difficult for people by threatening to arrest people for sleeping when they have no legal places to go. Nor are people going to start clustering on the sidewalks to sleep necessarily, because people don't like to sleep on sidewalks generally. You know, it's not comfortable, it's not pleasant, it's very vulnerable, but if it happens, it cannot be the basis for a crime in and of itself. That's what has to be said. But you see, Fitzmaurice didn't want to say that because he's too squeamish or something. I'm not sure why. I can't really speculate on why he didn't want to say it, but he didn't say that. Instead, he kept denying that he was saying it's legal to sleep on the sidewalks and walking around the issue. And so Rotkin was having a field day of saying, look, wait a minute, aren't you saying that you're going to make it legal for people to sleep on the sidewalks? I mean, come on. And I'm afraid you got to confront Rotkin head on this issue. Yes, that's what he's saying. That's what he should be acknowledging. Anyway, you're going to hear only two people talked about this proposed amendment. And this amendment, by the way, would not even have been made it legal in November. It would have been an advisory proposal. That's how Fitzmaurice said. So it's meaningless. It's largely meaningless. It doesn't produce any changes. It means the next city council gets to deal with it, and we get to spend another 150 hours of all our time going out protesting, risking arrest, wasting our time at council meetings, convincing a new bunch of city council people. So, we're going to hear a little bit of this discussion at the city council, and you can, of course, call in and join this discussion at 427-3772. Again, this is council member Fitzmaurice. I think we're going to join Rotkin talking, and then I think it goes directly into the public comment, and the public have a lot more to say that's pertinent than anything the council has to say. The council is obviously afraid to really deal with the issue, even though they've got two task forces, one that cost $10,000, the Homeless Issues Task Force, with the previous one to that, the task force to examine the camping ordinance. They've spent literally hundreds of hours looking at this, but they still cannot string one word coherently in front of another and honestly take a position on this. It's quite something to watch. So what we have here is Fitzmaurice's proposal that it shall be legal to sleep on the sidewalk as an advisory proposal, which the voters can vote up or down, and then the next council can decide what to vote on that. But it will be illegal to sleep in a vehicle, and it will be illegal to cover up with blankets. The idea that anyone in his right mind would vote for this as an advisory proposal or anything else, of course, I think we need, you know, there's a real problem here. And, of course, it comes back on Tuesday. David Silva has seen this problem as clearly as anyone else, and he's been discussing with me the fact he's contacting these council members and having hurried private conversations with them and so forth. Again, the idea of this backdoor diplomacy stuff, which I see this as a failed policy. Not that I don't think David has the best intentions, but I think the alternatives have to be mobilized, and that's where, by the way, what we're doing tomorrow. There's a meeting of homeless activists in the Holiday Inn from 2 to 5. Compliments of Michael Schmidt, who's helping us get together and discuss what we want to do as an alternative to this ridiculous idea, and also in terms of possible protests we can mobilize, perhaps along the lines of the People's Campaign in Los Angeles against the Democratic Party and in Philadelphia, the kind of mass protests that had some impact in Seattle and Washington, D.C. Let's hear now a little bit of what the council's was doing back on July 11th.
Vote on at our next meeting. I think it would be a better way to go than vote up or down. I don't want to vote no on anything that you might want to eventually do because I'd like one of these to pass.
First of all, I want to say I was at the meeting yesterday afternoon with representatives of the lodging industry to say that there was a meeting. To say that there was buy-in is a leap that I think cannot be made.
Looks like the wrong tape, folks. So my apologies. That was a little earlier on that date. Let's skip briefly to another subject while I try to prep myself better. Borders, as you know, is a big bookstore downtown that's moved into some controversy. It was the subject of significant protests, I guess, the first 2 days or first two openings it was here. You may have read in the paper today that Borders is still being targeted by individuals unknown. That they're calling them vandals, saying that they are, some foul-smelling substance was discharged, something that stuck to the window. I'm not quite sure what went on down there. I didn't get down there today. I was actually there last night reading a book. I go into Borders and avail myself of their comfortable reading facilities. I know a lot of the staff there. I don't ever buy anything there. I don't believe in buying from bookstore chains, particularly not Borders and Barnes & Noble, because however nice they are, and reports have it that they're as nice as Bookshop Santa Cruz in terms of how they treat homeless people. I haven't heard negative reports from the poet outside who sells his poetry out there. And I haven't heard reports of bathroom exclusion, though I haven't checked it out in great detail. And Bookshop Santa Cruz is famous for maintaining community bathrooms for several decades in this community, to which it should be commended. Still, Borders and Barnes & Noble controlled, 5 years ago, 85% of the state market in books, and that is a very dangerous situation, I think, for smaller bookstores, whether you like Coonerty or not. You got a call coming in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. I just want to let people know that I got some inside information that the vice presidents were briefed on Neil Coonerty's history in this town. And maybe we can hope that some anti-Neil Coonerty propaganda will be coming out, like, onto the streets. Because, personally, I think both those stores suck. Bye.
Thank you. And that's a man who's been around for a while and should know and does know what he's talking about. Yeah, Neil Coonerty's not let me in his bookstore for the last 6 years. Actually, not just his bookstore, but the little restaurant next door, which used to be called Georgiana's. I think it's now called So Say We. I led the protests against his store back in 1994 when he was on the city council and pressing the downtown ordinances, laws that make a criminal to sleep outside. Sorry, laws that make a criminal to sit on the sidewalk, peacefully ask for spare change, have a political table close to a sidewalk cafe. There's a whole bunch of noxious restrictions that simply give merchants more power and give the police more power to restrict the behavior of people that they find of questionable appearance, although they don't use a standard of appearance in the actual downtown ordinance. It says things like, if you sit on the sidewalk, it's illegal. And now the rule is sit within 10 feet of a shop storefront, it's illegal. And that store is still being enforced, and you see this particularly around the Alibaba's kiosk, where if people have been getting tickets for sitting 50 feet away from the ATM, and you see cops occasionally using tape measures and gave out a citation with it 2 months ago to a woman sitting nearby. We did an interview on that whole situation. It's a way of intimidating a class of people and empowering police officers who are overly empowered on Pacific Avenue already. particularly considering these new cameras that have gone up and that are going up and down the mall, snooping endlessly. They got this camera in front of New Leaf that's trained on the hippie planter area. It's just, hey, graphic 1984, folks, if you ever read the George Orwell book, where they have cameras everywhere and Big Brother is watching you. This is, apparently, it's with the collusion of New Leaf Market. So if you want to protest there, the thing to do is to tell New Leaf to, you know, turn over a new leaf. I've had enough of that stuff. Anyway, borders, as I've said, and I've done some discussion of this on this show, has, along with Barnes & Noble, a huge part of the retail market in California, and probably in significant number of other states as well, according to what I've read. And I've not done a lot of, I've done no independent research myself on this, but I've never heard it, these figures disputed, that, you know, there's 85% of the market as of even just 5 years ago. And I've talked at length with the Mama Bear's management up in Oakland, a lesbian bookstore, how bookstores are failing like leaves, falling like leaves, and failing one after another because of the impact of chains, like the Barnes & Noble and Borders, and also Amazon.com, the online service where you can buy books. And that, the danger there, of course, is that all these stores are losing money from what I hear. Borders is losing money. Amazon.com is losing money. And they're losing millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they don't mind that as long as there'll come a point where they've driven the competition to the ground, and then they can raise their prices. You know, that's the standard approach. And as far as I know, there's nothing to stop them from doing that. One would think that the laws against, you know, monopolistic practices do, and perhaps someone who is more knowledgeable about this and is listening to this show and has more information can tune in. I was wandering around with a tape recorder on the day of those protests and trying to get some detailed information, and did get some, and I'm going to play a bit of that while I ready myself with my other tapes. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and if you want to call in, please do. I will catch you off-air or on-air, but I'm going to catch you.
Distributing a flyer, communities, not corporations, keep borders out.
Right.
Do you have any stats on specific communities where borders came in and then other bookstores as a consequence, or let's say soon thereafter fell away? Or
I don't have specific stats. I have these statistics.
And these,
on these.
Between 1991 and 96, independent booksellers' market share fell from 32 to 18.6%. Megastores control 81.4% of the books we read and buy. And, of course, the fact that the money goes out of the community. But you don't have any stats on whether, let's say, in Palo Alto or South San Francisco, bookstores have closed after borders moved in?
I do not, no.
Anybody here might know about that? Skip Spitzer, you're a man who's perhaps knowledgeable on the borders controversy. Can you tell me of any stores in other cities?
I wanted to talk to you sometime about the video camera at the meeting.
Before we get into that, let me get the borders thing, because we're in the middle of the big borders day.
That's
here.
True,
I will be happy to talk to you about that. Have border stores in other communities, to your knowledge, been followed by bankruptcies or closing of bookstores? Any sense how this has happened in Palo Alto or other communities?
I don't know. I really don't know. I suspect that borders have typically done well in almost every location. Because I've yet to hear of Borders having a problem in a community.
Unlike Barnes & Noble, or I say Crown Books, which closed down.
Unlike Crown Books.
But that was rare for Crown, too, right?
I suspect that it was rare for Crown, because both of these corporations have the ability to have unprofitable stores for a significant period of time until their competition goes out of business. I'm really not sure what happened in the case of Crown. It may be that its proximity to a bookshop.
Okay.
Their whole
name is
Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Their whole chain went out of business, Crown. They went bankrupt.
So it wasn't as a consequence of a good boycott here in Santa Cruz?
No. I mean, I think maybe that had some effect on the local store, but their whole nationwide chain went bankrupt.
Now, I was asking Skip if you know of any communities where Borders has come in and then soon thereafter other bookstores closed. Do we have any stats on any of that?
You know what? I don't have stats, but I definitely... Here you go.
Thank you. Because that's a subject that interested me. I actually went into Borders and asked if they had a Borders book, a book about the store
right.
Borders, and or a book as a critic wrote about the store Borders, either one way or the other, and apparently not as of yet. So
I'm pretty sure that has happened. I don't know of specific instances, so I can't give you stats on that.
Okay. Anything that either of you want to say to the Free Radio Santa Cruz audience of 5 million that this will be going out to?
Show up Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Resource Center for Nonviolence for the next meeting of the Santa Cruz Direct Action Network, where we plan actions like this one.
Uh-huh. So, and how successful has this been today? How long have you guys been protesting?
I guess I also wanted to say that Borders has this whole line where they welcome us and they're glad that we're offering this opinion, but I just encourage people to see through that, because that's a total lie. They're not happy that we're protesting them. They're just happy that they're opening in Santa Cruz and people are buying books there. It's not like they support the protests.
It's the positive spin approach.
Well, they're like summer camp counselors, but just encourage people to see through that. They've got all these like hip speakers and...
Yeah, tonight there's a black lesbian writer or poet.
Right.
That's right, and there's one copy of every book Noam Chomsky has ever written.
Oh, really? Is that right?
There's one copy of each.
Is that right? One copy.
They will be purchased because they're excellent books. And they will not be restocked in all likelihood. This is the same strategy that Crown Books used in order to defray criticism about its selection of books.
Now, how long have you been down here today, Skip, at this protest?
Since about 9:30 this morning.
And had pretty much started then?
It started around 9:30. There were people here handing out leaflets, a lot of people with signs. The police did come at one point and tell us that we were obstructing the public way.
And were you any differently arranged than you are now?
Yes. We were obstructing less so.
Here we have some police officers even now.
But again, the police came before, and they weren't terribly familiar with the downtown behavior ordinances, which restrict this kind of activity.
Even though they've been trained in those ordinances, isn't it strange?
Presumably they've been trained in those ordinances, but we were engaging in legal activity, and we resisted their efforts to get us to leave the sidewalk.
Is this one of the officers, by the way?
No, they weren't here before, and they left.
So you essentially, you were
nobody in charge.
Nobody in charge.
Right.
We don't have anybody in charge here.
Who's in charge of the group?
Nobody's in charge of the group.
Well, the thing is, you can't attach your banner to any public post. You can hold on to it, but if it's attached, then we gotta take it down. There's a municipal ordinance on it. Okay? It's like anything else. You can't just plaster things on the window. Okay?
So you take it down?
You guys can hold it. Okay? But it can't be attached to the post.
Well, if we hold it, aren't we obstructing the sidewalk?
And then we'll deal with that as we go along.
Well, I'd like to ask you before we get there.
If you obstruct the sidewalk, then that's another ordinance.
Is this an obstruction of the sidewalk right here?
I'm just going to tell you.
Here's a situation in which the sidewalk has plenty of access points for people to walk.
I'm telling you that the signs can't be attached to the post.
Okay.
Okay, and I'll let my supervisor know that I've told you.
Well, you've told several of us.
Okay, all of you.
No, you haven't told everyone.
Well, just several of you.